Hello, my friend.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. How was the pizza?
Very well. the missus made it, so I have to say it was great.
Well, I wanted to thank you for taking time to speak with me today, my friend.
Yeah, no problem, man. No problem. Glad to do that.
I wanted to ask you about the creative process for Zero Hour in Doomtown.
Right.
How long did it take to put the material together?
That's a good question. I have to think back. I think we started early 20 when we came. We did a lot of shows and touring and gigs for the previous record, Gringos Galacticos. And we started writing for Zero Hour in, I think it was January 20. And we were halfway, and then the whole pandemic, you know, came. Mm-hmm. And we were supposed actually to play some shows in the United States for May 20, but that was all canceled because of the whole pandemic thing going on. So then we decided to, you know, just finish what we had started and went back to the studio and wrote more songs. And originally, Zero Hour was meant to be, you know, like maybe 10 songs, but we wrote like 14. And in the end, we had enough for a double album, and we recorded. And while the pandemic went on, you know, we said like, okay, now we got plenty of time to finish that record. So that's what we did in basically the rest of 20 and early 21. You know, we had some pauses in between because of all the crazy pandemic shit going on, you know, with all the rules that were enforced by government and you couldn't meet and all that kind of stuff that happened at the time. But then we had enough songs for a double album, and in the United States it was released as a single album on vinyl, but back here in Europe it was released as a double album. So yeah, that's how that actually went. Was a strange time, you know, like that whole pandemic thing. It's you know, like for a band, you go like, we didn't have a clue, you know, what was going to happen. And it's strange, you know, now by 24, when you look back, it's completely, it looks ages away. You know, it's like it never happened for some reason.
Sure. And yeah. And I think one of the things that came out from the pandemic is, and this album's a prime example, mm-hmm. some of the greatest albums in the past 10 years have came out from that period.
Thanks, man.
Where bands had time to really focus on their craft and to make strong albums.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that really helped the whole process, you know, because we didn't have any distractions going on. You know, we didn't have a tight schedule. You know, we didn't have to be ready for the next tour or anything in between. We had really time to, you know, think, you know, we wrote more and more songs. You know, it's not like it wasn't forced in any way. You know, it's not like, okay, you know, let's make the best album that we can. Let's take our time. You know, let's make sure that it sounds the way that we want. And it was an interesting process. You know, I mean, I like both sides of the coin. You know, sometimes you're pressed for time and you have to make quick decisions. That can be great as well, you know, because it forces you, you know, to make decisions, you know. And when you have enough time, that's sometimes it's a bit dangerous, you know. You're working too long on stuff, maybe songs that are not cutting it, you know. You're keep on working on them, and in the end, you know, you get some half-baked stuff. But that didn't happen with Zero. We were really confident with all the stuff that we did on that album.
And I wanted to ask you about the track Last Man Standing. That's my favorite track on the album.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah. Yeah, that song means a lot. You know, I remember when I came up with the main riff, you know, and that had that, you know, kind of Black Sabbath kind of trouble feel to it.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm. I played that once during soundcheck, I guess, and one of the band members was looking up to me, "What's that?" You know, so I don't know, just came up with it, and we recorded it straight away with an iPhone or something like that, and that's mostly what happens. You know, you you get out of bed early in the morning and you pick up your guitar and you play something and you go like, oh, where's my iPhone? You know, I have to record this.
Right.
That's how it goes. But, you know, that song meant a lot because, you know, the last the years before that we recorded Zero were pretty rough. You know, I lost my brother in 18 and, you know, he was always my, you know, my big buddy. You know, we discovered all the bands early 80s, you know, all the heavy bands, and we listened to music together. And when he passed away, I was the last of my family, you know, the way I grew up. And that song was about, you know, that feeling that you have that you're somehow, you know, the last man standing, you know, you represent your upbringing, you know, you have all the moral values, you know, from your parents and your older brother, and you take that along in your life, you know. And sometimes there are moments of desperation, but there's also a lot of pride, you know, in what you do.
And that rhythm of that track, if that doesn't get you out of your seats, you need to check your pulse.
yeah, I really like that song, because when we were halfway writing the album, we had a change of lineup. And we got our bass player, Natasha. We call her Pebbles, by the way. Well, we got Pebbles in the band. And, well, she was listening to what we were doing, you know, the demos we recorded. And she added a lot with the bass, and which added to the groove, which changed a little bit the whole groove of the song. She had a couple of ideas. And, yeah, especially when we play that live, you know, that's a great song. It's one of the songs that we actually play live from the album. And it goes really well. It's a nice song to the song has some room for some jamming, you know. It's mm-hmm. We don't stick exactly to the album format when we play live. You know, there's some room to do stuff, you know, and that song – yeah, that suits that approach really well.
Yeah, you can definitely say that Pebbles makes it bam bam.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, she just laid down the bass for the next album. We actually are recording at the moment. And she laid down some bass grooves. It's really amazing. I was, you know, doing some bass edits today. She actually finished the last song this afternoon. It's 8 p.m. over here, and we finished about 2 hours ago. And I did some edits, and it sounds huge. It sounds really big.
And another one of my favorite tracks is the title track itself. I wanted to ask you if you could speak on that as well.
Yeah, Zero Hour in Doomtown. That main riff was around for quite a while. Actually, I had that riff already when we were recording the previous album, and somehow I had a different set of lyrics for that one, and somehow the lyrics and the music did not belong. You know, it didn't mm-hmm. felt right. So it fell off the wagon for the previous album. But I kept playing that main riff. I was going like, there's something in that song, you know. So, yeah. I don't know how it happened. Oh yes, I remember though. We were looking on the internet. You can find a very old movie from the British broadcast service from, I think it's 1948 or 1947, and they have this. I call that it's like a public warning, you know, for a nuclear war, and they call it Zero Hour in Doomtown. And I watched that. It's kind of an instruction video, you know, what happens when you get shelled by the atomic bomb, you know, what can you do? So I watched that video, and that title that stuck, and all of a sudden I had the idea for the lyrics. And that fitted together with that riff. And all of a sudden, the song was back on track. You know, it was going like, all right, this song had to wait for the right set of lyrics, you know, to come alive. And yeah, that's another example of how we write. You know, we write a lot of riffs, but it all has to fit together. You know, it's like a big puzzle, you know, what goes where. And all of a sudden, you go like, yeah, that's the way it is, you know. And the same thing is happening right now with the new album. You know, I'm in the process of writing lyrics and recording some vocals. And I had one of the songs, you know, I recorded the vocals already. And last week I was sitting in my car listening to a mix and I was singing along and I came up with an entirely different set of lyrics. And I went like, it fits the whole thing a lot better. You know, so that's how it works sometimes, you know.
And I wanted to ask you, how did the band form one? And I love the name of the band. How did that come to you?
Yeah, and, you know, when we started this band, which is many years ago, I really wanted, you know, to get something more simple. I was used to play, you know, more technical, more progressive kind of music, which I did in the 80s and did in the 90s. And when I started this band, I was going like, oh man, I want to go back to basics, you know, want to do something simple, something that grooves, something that is heavy, and something, you know, that you can pick up immediately. That was really important to me, you know, have a simple kind of songwriting, because when you listen to all the great classic bands, you know, you can pick up their tunes, you know, and that's what I wanted with Digath. And the name of the band actually came from, I think it was in the it's in the Funk List of the second Down album, Down 2, and it says something like a quote, and in the end they say Digath. So I didn't know what it meant. I had to look it up. And then I found that, you know, this way of putting verbs with the TH behind it, you know, goes back to the King James Bible, you know, to dig a pit. And I was going like, wow, you know, that sounds pretty darn heavy. You know, that fits the thing I have in mind. So that's how that came along. And it stuck. So we're still called that way, Digath.
And as far as the new release, when do you see it coming out?
Hopefully, when everything goes smooth, it will be the fall of 2024. It depends a little bit because, you know, like there's a physical process to vinyl, which takes up a couple of months. You know, it's like you have to get it pressed, you have to get it out to the distributor. So that takes roughly 4 or 5 months to get that done. So we're looking at a deadline now, trying to be finished by the end of May. And I'm not sure if we're going to meet that schedule because we're also got a lot of gigs coming up. Actually, we're touring the United States in June. By the end of June, we're playing the Maryland Doomfest and do some gigs more. So in between, we try to, you know, fit in the mixing and the mastering and you know, we're still recording, so I'm not too sure if we're going to meet that schedule. And like you said, you know, you have to take your time with a record, you know.
Sure.
You have to really, you know, squeeze it and get the best out of the songs. And sometimes it goes quick, and sometimes it takes a little bit more time. But hopefully we will be done by the end of May, maybe end of June. So, well, that probably would be fall, winter 24, maybe an early 25 release, but I'm still shooting for a fall of 24.
And along the band's musical journey, what do you feel has been the best advice that has been given to the band along the way?
Wow. I had a lot of advice in the last 20, 25 years from a lot of people, you know. A funny story, you know, when I was about maybe 25 years ago, I did some roadie work. I did some guitar tech work for a blues, a really big guitar player, Pat Travis. I'm pretty sure you heard of him.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been his tech for a couple of years. And, you know, and he's an amazing player. And he taught me a lot about playing, you know, like he really played from the heart, and he said a really couple of good things, you know, that I took along with me. And, you know, one of the good things that I remember from him, you know, is that you have to stick with your stuff, you know. When you make music for a long time, there are many people that want to give you good advice, you know, but it's the strongest thing if you know, stay true to the stuff that you're doing. Sure. Now, regardless if you're successful or not, you know, at least you're happy doing your own stuff. Because along the way, there are many people, you know, that want to give you advice, and many people that want to be part of the band or want to help you out with the recording process or whatever, you know. And it's really easy to get distracted and go from the left and go to the right and listen to this and listen to that. But in the end, you have to live with your record, you know. So that's what I learned from that. You know, we have to be happy with what we do. And when we are happy, I'm pretty sure a lot of the fans will be happy too.
And when you're not working on music, do you have any hobbies that you enjoy in your spare time?
Yeah, well, most of the spare time goes into music. You know, it takes a lot of time, but there's a lot of stuff that interests me. I'm very much into, you know, in the history of World War II. You know, I try to go to a couple of museums every year, and you know, I'm very interested in the more technical side. You know, like you know, for tanks and trucks and all that stuff. You know, it always amazes me. You know, that in a time of war, you know, that people get really creative and you know, get technical advanced, which is a strange thing. You know. On one side of it, but it's amazing, you know, what people can organize. You know, it's unbelievable. Sure. If you go, there's a big museum very close to here, which you know, got a lot of stuff, you know, from the U.S. Army when they came to Europe, you know, like in 1944, and they show you how they did things, you know, how they shipped everything over, had a production line, and all that kind of stuff that amazes me a lot. You know, like wow, you know, it's yeah, you know, people are really really tough when it comes to survival, and they can do amazing things. They can do bad things as well, but they can also do amazing things.
And I also wanted to ask you, what's the best way to get merchandising and a physical copy of your album?
Oh, there are a couple of ways. When you're living in the United States, you have to look up for our record label over there, Qumran Records. On their website, you can find all our stuff, our albums. There's also a link to our T-shirts and stuff like that. We got our own Bandcamp where you can find a lot. Over here in Europe, we got No Dust Records taking care of our albums and T-shirts, but even through our website, you can find a lot. And even when you Google us, you know, on Amazon and all that kind of stuff, that you can find our albums.
And lastly, I wanted to ask you, if you could give a message to your fans, what would that message be?
Oh, well, you know, that's a simple message. That's the stuff that we're saying for the last 20 years. I always say, keep on digging.
Well, I wanted to take a time to thank you for delivering an album that I enjoy from top to bottom.
Cool.
And I definitely dig it from top to bottom.
That's cool. That's great to hear. You know, that's the most rewarding thing, you know, that there are people on the other side of the world, you know, listening to your music and really absorbing it and taking the time listening to it, and they give you this kind of comments. You know, there's no bigger reward than that.
Well, thank you again, my friend, for your time, and I hope you have a great rest of your day, my friend.
Thank you very much, and I hope to speak to you again.
Yes, we definitely will talk about the new album for sure, my friend.
Cool. Well, we'll do that.
All right, cheers.
Bye-bye. See you around.